Hi everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It's Friday morning, which means it's time for the weekend review and preview conversation, where my guests will recap how markets have performed over the past few sessions and preview what you can expect in the week ahead. Today's segment will primarily focus on the September inflation data as well as the latest FOMC meeting. Joining us for the conversation, I'm glad to welcome back Matthew Tormey, Equity Strategist Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Matt, welcome. We're happy to have you.
Hey, good morning, Siobhan. Thanks for having me back.
Of course, so let's get started. Let's begin with the September inflation data. What did the data reveal about the current inflationary environment here in the U.S.?
Yeah, so this week we did receive the September CPI print, and just going through the key takeaways, for the most part, the data did come in slightly above consensus for both the headline and core figures. And as a reminder, core CPI does exclude the food and energy categories. On a month-over-month basis, headline CPI rose by 0.2%, and core CPI was up 0.3%. And although these figures came as a disappointment relative to consensus, as I just mentioned, on a year-over-year basis, headline CPI did fall to 2.4%, which is the lowest that it's been since February 2021. So still an encouraging sign that inflation is moving in the right direction. Taking a closer look at some of the details, a mid-single-digit decline in gasoline prices was supportive. However, core goods prices rose this month after steadily falling for more than a year as the apparel in both new and used car price categories edged higher. On the services side, there were significant increases in the transportation services, auto insurance, and medical services categories. However, owner's equivalent rent slowed this month, and given that owner's equivalent rent is the biggest driver of overall inflation, if this more moderate pace of increase is maintained, then it would help to keep inflation on a downward trend. And finally, just this morning, we did receive the September PPI inflation data, which came in flat on a month-over-month basis, as, again, declines in gasoline prices were supportive. Now, the question is, what is the Fed going to do in light of this recent data? It's likely that the recent inflation data is sure to leave the Fed a bit uncertain, but we do still maintain our base case view that the Fed will cut rates in both November and December. However, as Fed Chair Powell has mentioned repeatedly, they do remain data dependent and could skip one of these meetings if the data runs strong.
So we also did receive the latest FOMC meeting minutes on Wednesday. Are there any notable takeaways from that you can share with us?
Right. So I'd say that the main takeaway from the FOMC meeting minutes was that the size of the September cut, which was 50 basis points, should not be seen as the standard in terms of the future path of easing. In looking at the meeting minutes, it was revealed that there was some disagreement among the meeting participants regarding whether to go forward with a 25 or 50 basis point rate cut, which is a bit in contrast to what Chair Powell had alluded to during the press conference. The minutes also confirmed that nearly all participants agreed that easing policy was appropriate given the collective group's judgment that the risks associated with the Fed's employment and inflation goals were back in balance. And in discussing the outlook for monetary policy, Fed officials anticipated a move toward a more neutral stance of policy over time if economic data continues to come in about as expected. Now, while policymakers may not see the urgency to move as quickly as they did in September, they acknowledged the restrictiveness of monetary policy and that the overall path of policy normalization would be more important in determining the degree of policy restriction rather than the specific amount of easing. So to round things out, it appears that nearly all the participants' takes on economic conditions had mildly deteriorated since July, specifically regarding the labor market, which we believe Chair Powell may have used to further support his case for the 50 basis point cut.
So I want to turn to equities for a moment. What are your thoughts on current valuations, and can you remind us of CIO's equity positioning views?
Yes. So on valuations, we are cognizant that they appear high with the S&P 500 forward price-to-earnings ratio trading around 21.5 times. However, we think this is reasonable given the favorable backdrop. As we've been articulating for many months now, we continue to view the backdrop as favorable, driven by healthy economic and profit growth, improving inflation, which has now prompted the Fed to start cutting interest rates, and strong growth in AI spending and, over time, monetization. Additionally, with the Fed cutting rates in September, we've looked at prior rate cutting cycles and found that when the U.S. economy avoided a recession, which is our base case view, the S&P 500 has risen by about 17% on average in the 12 months following the first cut. And wrapping up on the valuation conversation, we'd also like to remind investors that valuations have no relationship with returns over the next 12 months, and that things like earnings trends are much more important, and we continue to have a supportive view on the outlook for earnings. And now, focusing on the second part of your question, Siobhan, on positioning, we do continue to have most preferred views on the financials, tech, and utility sectors. So starting with our rationale on financials first, we do believe that the Fed rate cuts should lead to lower funding costs, and lower short-term rates could lead to a potential pickup in loan growth, which ultimately is supportive for the sector. On tech, AI infrastructure spending does remain robust, and key semiconductor components that are needed for AI will likely remain supply constrained into next year. And even though it's still early in the rollout of AI applications, so far the uptake has been encouraging, and we continue to believe that investors will continue to gravitate towards high quality companies that have good secular growth, and a number of them are in the tech sector. And on utilities, the sector's defensive characteristics should offer some ballast in portfolios in the event economic growth concerns arise. And about 20 to 25% of the sector does have material exposure to positive AI trends, which we do expect to help drive returns for the sector going forward.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation, Matt, and I want to turn to the week ahead. What is taking place that investors should be mindful of?
So next week, the economic calendar is shaping up to be pretty busy. So let's dive right into it. On Tuesday, we'll receive the October Empire State Manufacturing Index reading, with last month's reading coming in above consensus by quite a wide margin. So it'll be interesting to see what this generally pretty volatile index reading ends up being. Turning to Thursday next week, the weekly initial and continuous jobless claims numbers will be released, with this week's initial claims rising to their highest level since August 2023. But the biggest increases in claims did come from states that were hit by Hurricane Helene, but there are also increases in some other states as well. We'll get another regional manufacturing reading with the Philadelphia Fed Manufacturing Index for October set to be released. Additionally, retail sales data for September is expected to show a greater increase from the prior month. Industrial and manufacturing production data for September is also set to hit the tape. And to round out the day, we'll get a better sense of the single-family housing environment with the October release of the NAHB Housing Market Index. And on Friday, we'll receive the September data for both housing starts and building permits, which are both expected to come in at lower levels relative to the prior month. Now, with the third quarter earnings season kicking off today, next week will be key, as the companies that are reporting will help set the tone for what's to come. So next week, we will hear from nearly 10% of the S&P 500 market cap, but the banks and other financials will dominate the releases. So this includes companies like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and Citigroup. And outside of financials, companies such as Johnson & Johnson, Netflix, and Procter & Gamble are also set to report.
Thank you so much for joining us, Matt.
Thanks, Siobhan. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.